Vipanastu Kriya Shakti,
Vipanastu Kriya Shakti,
Bhutta Prakriti Ravya, Shakchadi Sapamam Stvatra,
Shakchadi Sapamam Stvatra,
Pravisto Nava Bhujyate, Vipana, stores to them, Kriya Shakti, the energy for activities, or the working senses, Bhuta, the five gross elements, Prakriti, the material elements, Avyaya, eternal, Shakti, the energy, Adisaha, controller, Puman, man, to then, Atra, here, Pravistaha, entered, na, does not, Avabhujyate, becomes subjected to knowledge. Translation. The five stores are the five working sensory organs. They transact their business through the combined forces of the five elements, which are eternal. Behind all these activities is the soul. The soul is a person and enjoyer in reality. However, because he is now hidden within the city of the body, he is devoid of knowledge. Purport. The living entity enters the material creation with the aid of the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And thus his body is formed. Although the living entity is working from within, he is nonetheless unknown. The living entity enters the material creation, but because he is bewildered by the material energy, he appears to be hidden. The bodily conception of life is prominent because of ignorance, navabhujyate. Intelligence is described in the feminine gender, but owing to her prominence in all activities, she is described in this verse as Adisa, the controller. The living entity lives by means of fire, water, and food grains. It is through the combination of these three that the body is maintained. Consequently, the body is called Prakriti, material creation. All the elements gradually combine to form flesh, bone, blood, and so on. All these appear at various apartments. It is said in the Vedas that the digested foods are ultimately divided into three. The solid portion becomes stool, and the semi-liquid portion turns into flesh. The liquid portion turns yellow and is again divided into three. One of these liquid portions is called urine. Similarly, the fiery portion is divided into three, and one is called bone. Out of the five elements, fire, water, and food, grains are very important. These three are mentioned in the previous verse, whereas sky, ether, and air are not mentioned. This is all explained in Bhagavad Gita 13:20. Prakritim purusam chaiva vidi anadi ubhavapi vikarams chagunams chaiva vidi prakritisam bhavan. Material nature and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of matter are products of the material nature. Prakriti, material nature, and purusa, the living entity, are eternal. When they both come in contact, there are different reactions and manifestations. All of them should be considered the result of the interaction of the three modes of material
Om Ajnana Trimanandasya Gyananana Salakriya Shakshuram Ninitam Yenatasmai Sigurve Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasri Gauravakta Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
interesting is that the material energy is described to be eternal.
Whereas on face value, one wouldn't think so. Because everything in this material world breaks down before our very eyes. Civilizations come into being and cease to exist. Great powers have ruled the world and there's not much left. Like, for example, if you look at the great culture of Greece, then where do you find it today, other than a few broken columns in Athens? There's not much left. So, Bhagavatam also describes like that many rulers have tried to possess the earth. There is a portion in the Bhagavatam known as the Bhumi Gita, the song of the earth. And in this particular section, the Bhumi Gita, the earth is speaking and said, so many men have tried to possess me, and now what is left of them but only names? So we see the temporary aspect of the material nature. And yet that same material nature is described as eternal. Because although the manifestations in so many different forms are constantly changing, material energy in itself is eternal. But even that seems to be in question, because we know that in the scriptures there is a description of an annihilation, the end of the day of Brahma, finished. It's all over. And then there is a period when the material nature doesn't exist at all. Many traditions speak of the end of the world. Sometimes someone is very convinced, stands on the street corner, the end of the world is near. And we also have our local representatives who are very sure that 2012 is the time when it's really going to happen, the end of the Maya calendar. Of course, I say that's probably when the Krishna calendar starts. Probably good for us. But anyhow, the point being that there is actually an annihilation. The end of the world does happen. But then it's only the end of the day of Brahma. And then then there's a night, and then there's again a day and a night. And thus we see that the manifestation of the material energy exists in cycles. Sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. But in continuing cycles. And thus, Prakriti is considered to be eternal. Although sometimes manifest and sometimes not. The material energy in its non-manifest state is known as pradana. It is said within pradana, it is the potential of the material creation, and within pradana, the three modes of material nature are in balance, it is said. And when these forces are in balance, they dissolve in one another. Just as when I push very hard with both hands, but I push with equal force, then the hands will not move. The two forces are neutralizing each other. So pradana is the neutralized state of the three modes of material nature. The potential of the material energy, which is then not manifest. And there is the eternal living being who also enters into this material world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives us some interesting information about the soul, when the soul enters into the material world. Because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta explains, the soul in the material world is in a dormant state. And that's very important to note, because here in this particular verse there is a reference that the soul is the enjoyer. Yes, the soul is the enjoyer, but at the same time, how is the soul the enjoyer?
That is an interesting question.
We are seeing that there are many enjoyable things. We don't have to go far. There is pizza and ice cream.
So now the question, who is enjoying it?
Who is? Is it the soul who is through the body actually tasting all these delicious flavors and so on? Well, if we listen to the description of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then we understand, no, it's actually not the soul. He explains that ultimately it is the soul. But the soul is currently in a dormant state, and the soul lends its energy to the mind, and thinking and feeling and willing, which are the original functions of the soul, are now stolen away by the mind. And he compares it to an ordinary bird which dresses itself up like a peacock and is strutting around and thinking it's quite something, and that is the mind. In other words, the mind has decorated itself with the attributes of the soul, which are thinking, feeling, and willing. Now, this process of devotional service, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Satya Kabunai Sravanadi Sudha Chitta Karya Udai. Udai means to awaken. So devotional service awakens the soul from its dormant state. So now, spiritual enjoyment, where does that take place? Does that take place on the level of the mind or on the level of the soul? It may be difficult to define, but obviously it can be on both levels. Once, when after having had a serious accident and finding myself in the hospital after comatic condition and so many other things, I was conscious, I was in the room, and I had a vision of Krishna. It started with trees, big trees, dark trees, and then slowly the vision went down, and then there were peacocks, many peacocks. I thought, wow, it's Vrindavan. Then it went down, and then between the trees there were cows, and then Krishna and Balaram, and then a village in the back, and Yasoda standing on the edge of the village. Now, was that a spiritual experience? It was, but I thought about it later, and I thought it took place on the level of the mind. Because if it would have taken place on the level of the soul, I would have awakened. But I didn't awaken. I saw the picture, but no ecstasy. It wasn't like what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami experienced, which is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had a dream. In the dream, he saw Lord Nityananda surrounded by so many cowherd boys, ecstatically chanting Hare Krishna in a deep voice, holding a reddish iron stick in his hand, his lotus eyes rolling intoxicated in his head, his gait like an elephant. And this Lord Nityananda, who was constantly moving all his limbs, right? When Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami saw Lord Nityananda in his dream, he immediately fell on the ground in obeisances. He immediately was overwhelmed by transcendental ecstasy and by love, even while dreaming. And when he awoke, he was overwhelmed by symptoms of ecstasy. Tears were streaming from his eyes. And in the dream, Lord Nityananda had ordered him to go to Vrindavan. And he immediately proceeded for Vrindavan. It was like a life-changing experience. Completely. It was a totally overwhelming life-changing experience. My vision wasn't like that. It was like a picture. Nice picture.
But in other words, a mental experience. So in the initial stages in Krishna consciousness, the soul is still in a dormant state. And yes, in the dormant state, when the soul is asleep, it is feeding the energy to the mind. But in the beginning, our experience is still very much taking place on the mental plane, and maybe slightly on the transcendental plane, but very slightly. But gradually, through the process of devotional service, our eternal identity becomes uncovered. Just like the Siddha Deha, the spiritual body. Of course, we are still conditioned devotees. We don't know what our spiritual body is. But does some of the spiritual identity sometimes come through in our devotional service? In the initial stages, not necessarily. Therefore, it is said that if
you really want to do it, then this is the trick. Hold on.
Done. If in the initial stages we get too much into our spiritual identity, then that is described as sahajism, where we are trying to artificially imagine a spiritual identity and artificially are trying to experience it. And, well, you know, my initials, my legal name is Peacock, right? And, you know, maybe that's a sign, and maybe I will start practicing Peacock! Peacock! And like that. And I can do the sound also, and possibly that's what I am, and that's why I'm so proud. That's all an interesting theory, yeah? And various academics might have a field day with such a theory and write books about it, but it's not convincing. This is artificial. This is when we mentally impose a spiritual identity upon ourselves. Nowadays, through the worldwide preaching of ISKCON, many Western devotees have settled at Radha Kund, the most sacred place in the entire universe. And they're taking shelter of the Radha Kund Babaji's. And just 2 days ago, one devotee wrote to me that now he had done this, and I did not need to worry, because so far he didn't detect any difference between what was going on there and what Prabhupada taught. That's when I get really worried that he lost his sense of discrimination. Because there is a huge difference, and Srila Prabhupada stressed that difference. And the essence of the difference is exactly on this topic of Siddha Pranali. Because that is what I'm talking about. Siddha Pranali, the way by which one enters into the spiritual identity. And basically, within that tradition, the process of Siddha Pranali is happening at the time of initiation, or as one is receiving his beads and getting his transcendental name, and possibly not. It's not that they necessarily have the same process of what are the four regulative principles, how many rounds, but they give a name and at that time formally accept a person as a disciple and then tell you who you are. You are Ananga Manjara. And then you go, I am Ananga Manjara. But we are still conditioned. So then it becomes a mental a mental process, imagination. Then we are thinking ourselves to be something. So this siddha pranali is condemned in the Nectar of Devotion. Srila Prabhupada describes about the cheap process of siddha pranali, unlike the bona fide process, where maybe at an advanced, very advanced stage, when one is approaching praying, that one becomes aware of his spiritual identity. But rather in a very initial stage, the stage of bhajana kriya, the stage where one becomes fixed up in the process of devotional service, they give the spiritual identity. And that's not possible. Therefore, in devotional service, one should not seek out spiritual sentiment, it is said. The acharyas are pointing out, one should not seek for a spiritual sentiment. So not that we sit and change our breath. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Well, this is a mental process. This is trying to mentally experience some feeling in the chanting. The process of devotional service is meant to awaken transcendental feelings, feelings of attachment for Krishna, but not that artificially we try to bring it out. One must wait till it naturally comes out. Srila Gaura Kesavadas Babaji was such an extraordinary devotee. It is said that he was extremely renounced and yet totally absorbed in deep loving attachment to Krishna. It is said that in Navadvip at one point he resided in the latrine of a dharmashala. Alright, that was his bhajan kutir. He had accepted that because someone, a wealthy man, insisted, "You accept a bhajan kutir. Please accept my offering of a bhajan kutir." And he said, "Okay, I will. I'll move into that latrine." No. But he did. And there happened to be two next to each other. So after a short while, many people came to visit Gaura Kesavadas Babaji, who was staying in such renounced conditions and offered respects. And so then after a while, another Babaji moved into the empty latrine next door and also was chanting there many rounds. But one day, Srila Gaura Kesavadas Babaji, he commented and he said, "A woman may enter into a hospital, into the maternity ward, and she may produce all the symptoms of labor pain. But if she is not pregnant, she cannot give birth to a child." As simple as that. Finished. And that summed it up. So spiritual emotions must awaken. They awaken on their own accord. And we need not actually search for them. Therefore, when we look at Raganuka Bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service, which is a topic which has been widely discussed, then the essence of this Raganuka Bhakti is described lolyam. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. It is said that the root by which one can come to spontaneous devotional service, where one actually serves Krishna with deep emotional attachment, is loyam, eagerness. But the eagerness should not be the eagerness to have transcendental feeling. The eagerness should be the eagerness to serve. That is the point. Many have shown the eagerness to have some transcendental experience. But have not shown at the same time the eagerness to serve. So the essence of eagerness, when it manifests in service, then everything will follow. Everything will come from there.
Anyway, back to five working sensory organs and five elements and other such earthly matters.
The point, though, since we are speaking, and we thought, well, why did he enter into this more ethereal topic? It's because one cannot approach Krishna with the blunt material senses. Atasya Krishna namadi abhavat krayam indriye sevam mukhe jivado swayam evasupuratyada. But one can only approach Krishna when one is satisfied Krishna through devotional service. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada taught us that the translation of the word bhakti is devotional service, mostly translated as devotion. But when you speak of devotion, then it comes across as a mood, as maybe a sentiment. But Srila Prabhupada's translation of devotional service is a translation which is very practical. It is practical. It is about doing something for Krishna. And that is ultimately the essence. The soul is eternally active, always active. Even when the soul is in the dormant state, the soul is still active. Just as when we are sleeping, we are active. So many dreams and so many things going on in the middle of the night, sometimes more than in the day. So many places we visit, and so many things we do in the morning, we're exhausted. That's exactly what happened to me this morning. I woke up, I had so many dreams in the night, I was finished. My God, that was a hard night work. So sometimes, in our dreams, we have to work, we do so many things, very active. Never is there a time when the soul is not active. Even in the state of nirvana, even in the state of nirvana, where the Buddhists are entering into a state where nothing is going on, it is said that between the material world and the spiritual world, or between Haridam and Devidam, there is a river known as Viraja. And this river Viraja is the state where the three modes of material nature are absent. And at the same time, there's also no spiritual variety there. Nothing. So it's the closest to nothingness that you can come. And therefore, those who are nihilists or voidists or sunyavadis, who try to make everything zero, by coming to the conclusion that all this matter, it doesn't exist, actually. And not only does matter not exist, even God does not exist. And not only does even God not exist, but even I don't exist. And then poof, and that's the end. Then nirvana, the state of nothingness. And then from nothing, they have philosophy, from nothing came all, and all returned to nothing. Of course, if you think about it intelligently, then that is a philosophy where you have to do a lot of hard work. It's a process, you have to do a lot of hard work, and in the end, what do you get? Nothing. So you have to work for nothing. So if anyone is interested, we wish them well. But I've never been one of those who work for nothing.
I'm from Holland, you know. We don't work for nothing. So it's awkward, huh? But nonetheless it exists. So imagine then that those who have attained nirvana are there within the viraja in a state of nothingness. Isn't then that the state where finally the soul is no longer active? No, even there in nirvana the soul is like working with all its energy, which is enormous. The soul with all its energy is focusing on this role that it's then playing of being nothing. So basically it's a theater performance, nirvana. That stage of nirvana is the great act of nothingness. It's announced as a great play and the curtains open and there's nothing on the stage. And the audience is waiting for the actors to come. There are no actors. And the audience are waiting for something to happen. But nothing happens on the play. But eventually the curtain will close. And then open again and the actors will come and bow down. And starring the soul. Yes, the soul appeared there, bows down and accepts the applause from the audience. Nothing in the main part, nothing was played by the soul. That is more or less the situation of nirvana. So the soul is eternally active, and the soul, the awakening of the soul, is a gradual process, but gradually it does begin. And we see that in more advanced stages of devotional service, spiritual emotions begin to reveal itself. And it is a symptom of awakening. And Prabhupada was in that regard quite generous. There was one devotee who in the early days in matchless gifts came to Prabhupada and said, Sometimes, when I'm chanting Hare Krishna, then I'm crying. Prabhupada said, yeah, me also. Yes, sometimes. So Prabhupada, in a way, gave credit to spiritual emotions. When all the devotees were receiving Prabhupada, Prabhupada had been in America, had preached there, had become ill, had gone back to India, and then he came back. That was a huge reception in LA when Prabhupada returned from India to the West. There were hundreds of devotees and they were like so emotional. The whole airport was just like overwhelmed by emotion, and practically there was no devotee with dry eyes. Everyone was crying. Prabhupada was back, except Sruta Kirti. Not a tear, nothing. So he looked around and he noticed that he was the only one. So that day, later in the day, he was massaging Prabhupada and said that, Srila Prabhupada, he said that all these devotees, they have so much love for you, but not me, Srila Prabhupada. It's like everyone was crying, but I didn't have a tear, like no feeling at all. And he was still massaging, and Prabhupada didn't say anything. But the next day, 24 hours later, when it was again time for massage, then Prabhupada obviously had thought about it. And Prabhupada said that this is also love. So Prabhupada was so kind that he accepted our service as love. We ourselves wouldn't see it as love. We would see we're doing it out of force. It's very simple. We're doing it out of fear. Shrutim. Apare smitten itare bharatamanya bhajanta bhava pita aham iyam nandavande yasya linda param brahma. Some follow the Shruti
Upanishads, Vedas, some are following the Smriti, Puranas, Itihasas, and so on. Fine. And some are following the Mahabharata, it's a, but they're all doing so out of fear. Why out of fear? Because we are good religious people, because we're afraid that otherwise thunderbolts might land on our head, or other, all the other horrible things that can possibly occur. Thus, we are a very religious Govinda Adipurusha. Please protect me. You may have seen Jayadvaita Maharaj's poem, Please Bless. It's all about blessing. Bless my home, bless my everything. If you haven't, just look on the internet. You can Google Jayadvaita and bless and see what you get. You get a really good poem, which unfortunately I haven't memorized. But the point there is that we're looking for blessings for our material life, and we are worshipping out of fear. Oh Krishna, please protect me. Oh Nrisingadev, Namaste Nrisingaya, that nothing happens. But true protection is not of the body. Lord Nrisingadev may protect the body, and he may not. That's not the protection, the real protection he gives. He is Sarva Vinasan. He is the remover of all obstacles. He is the protector of the soul. That is the real protection that he gives. And that's the real blessing you get from Krishna consciousness. Blessings for the soul. For the body, well, you may not. No guarantee whatsoever. So in this way, we are part of a fully transcendental process. Therefore it is some worship the Lord following the various scriptures out of fear, but I am worshipping Nanda Maharaj, because in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj's house the Supreme Absolute Truth is playing as a child. And what comes in then? Suddenly it's no longer liberation, the Supreme Absolute Truth, blessings for improved material life. It's about higher taste. He, the Supreme Lord, is playing as a child. Did you see it? It's amazing. You missed it. Come. Come and see the amazing pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And that is what really matters to us. And that is the awakened state when we see the eternal amazing pastimes of Krishna. Have you stopped my time? So, any questions, any comments? Yes.
So far I understood from our teachings that symptoms of mind are thinking, feeling and willing. And the symptoms of the soul are such ananda. And you spoke that the soul has also this thinking, feeling and willing.
No, I said the mind also has. The mind, the thinking, feeling and willing, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, are not the qualities of the mind. They are the qualities of the soul. Thinking, feeling and willing is naturally happening in the spiritual, on the spiritual plane. There we are feeling. Yes. When we are free from all mind, when you go back to the spiritual world, the mind stays behind. It's one reason to go. Right? So there, no more problem with the mind. But thinking and feeling and willing are going on like anything. Think about Krishna, feel about Krishna, and we want Krishna. And so thinking, feeling and willing are very much the qualities of the soul. And this is explained by
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There is a book which is called Lord Chaitanya's Teachings. It's a compilation of a number of essays. I'm not sure in which one it's there. I can't remember. But it's in that particular book. If you don't have it, you should get it. And you get a little dictionary at the same time. Very interesting. Really, some deep Siddhanta there. So yeah, it's a somewhat deeper or expanded insight that thinking, feeling, and willing are there in the soul. But it's logical. Satsit Anant, happiness. What is that happiness? What is it? What would you define? Happiness is a... In what category is happiness? Happiness is a...
Feeling.
Yeah. So?
I thought it was beyond, but... Because Krishna speaks also in Bhagavad Gita.
You think it's beyond feeling?
No. But
you think when the gopis are just almost dying in separation, that's not feeling? Feeling is what predominates, spirit, but not mundane feeling. Gopya kamat, bayat kamsu. It says the gopis, through their lusty feelings, kamat, have attained perfection. There's no difference between Bhoma Vrindavan and the eternal Vrindavan. So, kamat, it is kamat, it is like transcendental lust, feeling. No, feeling is there. It's all about feeling. That's all that counts. That is rasa. Rasa means feeling. But rasa is... Feeling is an ingredient in rasa. It's in the exchange. There are mutual feelings. Sadhanamridiyamayam sadhavodiyam tahamat anyate na janati mahanti anantiyam anagapi. Both have feelings. Krishna, the devotee, lives always in the heart of Krishna. And Krishna always is in the heart of the devotee. They're always thinking of each other. Feeling. Thinking. Krishna's always thinking of Radharam. Always. Always. That's not my idea. It's not an obscure idea. It is a clearly explained concept by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, it's mainstream philosophy. It's not some sort of fake concept. And yes? I'm a little deaf in my left ear. It's blocked.
What's the idea of this? I thought I've heard it maybe from Bhaktivinoda, one of the other previous acharyas, that this idea that the spiritual master reveals to you your form at initiation. I'm wondering if that's a mistake that I made, or is there somewhere that...
Okay. Well, I spoke in my lecture about Siddha Pranali, which is that sort of initiation. It's premature Siddha Pranali. And there's also a bona fide Siddha Pranali, where one, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that several times. In Jiva Dharma, he begins in chapter 1 by someone whose spiritual identity, one Vaishnava reveals the spiritual identity to another Vaishnava. Right there in chapter 1. And in Harinam Chintamani, he gets into the topic in a little bit more technical manner. Then we find that several of our acharyas, there is a particular line of our acharyas that are practicing that Siddha Pranali. In particularly, Gopal Guru Goswami and his disciple Jamachandra Goswami. Then, in Jiva Dharma again, in the later chapters, there is an interesting reference where Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that it was Swarup Damodar Goswami who was teaching this kind of devotional service. And he taught, it is said, both Raghunadas Goswami, and he taught Gopal Guru Goswami. And these two are particularly mentioned there. And he, now, Raghunath Das, that is also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Antya Lila. There's a description that when Raghunath finally ran away from home and came to Jagannath Puri, he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who placed him under the care of Sarup Damodar Goswami, and then Sarup Damodar Goswami was teaching him in Antaranga Seva. Yeah? Or Antaranga Seva means in the eternal, in the Nitya Lila, or in one's eternal identity, that means spiritual identity in the spiritual body. So, in Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that a little more, and he says that Sarup Damodar Goswami was teaching Raghunath Das the process of automatic revelation, and he was teaching to Gopal Guru Goswami the process of conscious cultivation of the spiritual identity. So apparently there are two approaches. One is through a formal initiation and a sort of a conscious meditation, and in that process it is described a spiritual identity is suggested and one feels if it fits, right? But the process that was taught to Raghunath Das was the process of automatic revelation. And that was the predominant process. So it is also mentioned that that's the predominant process. So that is really giving the conclusion on the whole issue. Yeah, it settles it up. So it's a very interesting reference there. And we can see that Srila Prabhupada very much followed that process of automatic revelation. Prabhupada simply stressed the verse, yasya deva parabhakti, everything will be automatically revealed. You simply surrender to Guru in service, you chant the holy name, and everything will come automatically. And but we see that maybe others in the Gaudiya, other current representatives of the Gaudiya Math, may be stressing more a process of conscious cultivation. And it's also interesting that we see that a conflict came between the two in modern times also. And that is actually, we find the roots of it there at Sarup Damodar Goswami, teaching Raghunath Das and Gopal Guru Goswami. Very technical, but interesting. Because we're living with these two groups. They are the neighbors. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also didn't follow. I think it stopped with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right?
Yeah. Bhaktisiddhanta has also followed the process of automatic revelation. And his disciple, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciple, Sridhar Maharaj, gives an explanation on the matter. And he says that this conscious effort of Siddha Pranali is meant for those who are prema rurukshu, or those who are approaching prema. That means in advanced stages of bhava. Because bhava also goes through its development. When one comes to bhava, at the first stages of bhava, bhava is incidental. There are moments where one is very much overwhelmed by a deep emotional experience of bhava, and then it's again broken. But at one time, this bhava becomes a fixed and uninterrupted state. And when one goes deep into that mood, then through that fixed and uninterrupted state of bhava, sthayi bhava, one goes deep in a particular mood,
now so much focus on that eternal identity, then one becomes prema ruruksu, one begins to approach it, and then such a siddha pranali would be possible, possibly be relevant. But, and it may still occur also in the future to come that one Vaishnava helps another Vaishnava in that way when he's prema ruruksu. It's not that we are against it, but it's not that we have to start looking, oh my God, who is the one who's now going to develop my spiritual identity? Because by chanting Hare Krishna, everything will be revealed. The chanting of Hare Krishna doesn't depend on any other external support process. Not on initiations, and specifically mentions C.C. Madhya 15108, this mentions the chanting of Hare Krishna doesn't depend on any initiation. It's no siddha pranali, no initiation whatsoever. It can produce full result. Golokira prema dana harinam sankirtana. So all the wealth of prema is available in Harinam Sankirtana. So there's no need for siddha pranali. But it may happen, who knows, if we ever get there. Now, most devotees will never get prema in this lifetime. Sorry, devotees. Most of us will be simply good sadhakas, serious devotees who try hard in devotional practice, and then they die. And then what happens? Back to square one. It has been preached to us. Now, it has been preached that... Well, I once gave a seminar, I'm ending with this because it's late. But I gave a seminar from 66 to 99. I gave it in 99. So in 66, the mood was that we're all going back to Godhead this lifetime. In 99, the mood was, if your guru is a Parama Presta Priya Sakhi, then theoretically it is possible that, you know, after many lifetimes, you could theoretically go back to the spiritual world if you're lucky. But most of us are not going to get it, so you may as well give up. You're going to take birth again. And that is for you, Lord Chaitanya, the most merciful incarnation, who comes to give to everyone what has no one never been distributed before, love of God. And there's only one little thing, haha, it's almost impossible to attain. And that's the most merciful incarnation. So that philosophy turns Lord Chaitanya into a monster. The truth of the matter is that if we die before we get to this prema, but if we have sincerely tried to please the Lord, then after this life, Lord Chaitanya will make up the difference. He will make up the difference. And then we'll get love of God somewhere else. And as we're about to enter the spiritual world or some other arrangement, Lord Chaitanya can make an arrangement. We'll get it and go back. Then even it's not necessarily so that you take your birth in another universe and have to first be in the past die as a Christian. Not necessarily, but Lord Chaitanya's mercy, possible now, if he makes up for it. And, of course, Srila Prabhupada said on many occasions, and once particularly in Portland, he said that if you follow four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds, right, faithfully, this lifetime, then you will go back to Godhead this lifetime. And then he said, I guarantee it, 3 times. Portland, you can look in the memories, three of these memory books, it's right there. So that's an important testimony, and it's not once, he said it on other occasions as well. So we have the Vedic process. I compare it to a landscape, and with mountains on it, on the bank of an ocean. The ocean is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. The waves are washing onto the beach and leave a watermark on the beach. And then these waves, they extend further and further than the mercy had ever been. And then comes Prabhupada, and he extends the mercy wave of Lord Chaitanya even one level further. And therefore, by the combined mercy wave of Lord Chaitanya, and then even further expanded by Prabhupada, even if you die as a sincere devotee and haven't reached love of Godhead, you can still go back to God this lifetime. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.